case.
Harmful Technologies, Inc. had all personnel at all. James J. Reed, Appellate Counsel. Michael E. Ware, Adrian M. Stocky, Appellate.
You may proceed.
Good morning. My name is Jim Reed, and I represent the appellants in this matter, Marble Technologies, Inc., and Sebastian Kuczynski. Your Honor, this case really stems around an easement that was located on Grandview Beach in Hampton, Virginia, back in 1936. And my three assignments of error all relate to this easement. The first assignment of error is that the court erred in not joining all of the necessary parties to this action. In this particular instance, the declaratory judgment action that was filed sought a declaration from the court that a 20-foot easement that runs the length of Grandview Beach moves with the mean high tide over the years. And so necessarily, that declaration will affect every property owner that has property where the easement is located, and if you accept my colleague's argument, it would affect the inland lots too, because if the easement does migrate, then one day those inland lots might be the Servian estate. And so,
right now, we've established in our case law that that's not a matter of subject matter jurisdiction unless it's provided for by statute. So that's not the case here. Which one of these various people and parties is not adequately represented by the arguments of others in this case?
The only one that I would argue, Your Honor, would be there's a restaurant located on what was lots E, F, G, H, and I on the 1936 plat, and it is the only commercial interest that's down there. And there are no other commercial interests.
Well, what does that have to do with the easement question?
Well, I would assume that if an easement were to migrate onto an area of his commercial property that hurt his business, that would be a unique damage that's not really defended or thought about by the others, lot owners.
Well, it may be a function of damages, but it doesn't resolve the underlying question of where the easement is or if it's there at all.
Well, I agree with
so,
that.
So on that subject, which is the subject of this particular case, there is no party who is not adequately represented by the other parties to the case.
I understand, Your Honor. I mean, my only argument on that
not a subject matter jurisdiction.
Okay.
You can move on to some other things if you'd like.
Thank you. The second assignment of error, I really have two parts to it, but it is that the erosion of the shoreline of Grandview Beach from 1936 to the present time has destroyed this 20-foot easement.
Well, it's destroyed the Servient lots.
Correct.
I mean, they're underwater.
Correct.
So for the movable easement, if there is such a thing, to move and to be affected, it has to move off the Servient lots to inland lots, which were not impressed by the original servitude to begin with.
I agree. And it's worse than that, Your Honor, because you've got Pine Drive, which is a 50-foot-wide paper street that is parallel to this 20-foot easement that is, I guess, west of the original Bayfront lots. Well, the 1936 liquidation deed specifically says that the easement, the properties conveyed by the deed are subject to this easement. But the paper street was not conveyed by that easement. It just wasn't. So the paper street, by the clear terms of the 1936 deed, is not subject to that easement. So that easement cannot migrate onto Pine Drive, which means either it has to jump the street or it disappears because...
But to jump the street, you have to jump the easement to lots that were not Servient easements in the original grant.
I agree. To me, it seems like the shorefront and Pine Drive is a vice. And as erosion made its way to Pine Drive, the Servient lots are gone. It was undisputed. I believe the plaintiff's expert, Don Davis, who's a surveyor, had testified that there's not enough land left on those original Bayfront lots to hold a 20-foot wide strip of land.
So this whole case is moot if, and all the arguments, legal arguments are moot, if irrespective of the movability of the original 20-foot easement, it certainly can't move to a lot that was not subject to that servitude.
Yes, Your Honor.
And if the lots that were subject to the servitude are underwater, then obviously everything's extinguished.
Yes, Your Honor. If this court would find that the easement was extinguished on that ground, then the rest of this is moot. Under the same category of the erosion has destroyed the easement, the trial court had found that the easement itself was ambiguous and therefore allowed parole evidence. I don't think that this easement is ambiguous at all. You've got a 1936 deed and a 1936 plat that specifically says that the deed says that the property is subject to an easement on a 20-foot road as designated on the map. The map has a 20-foot road with two smooth parallel lines that says 20-foot road along present mean high water. And I believe that the plaintiff's position was that present can be interpreted more than one way. And therefore it's ambiguous, and therefore parole evidence is needed. However, you can't ignore the fact that this word present was written in 1936. It's within the four corners of the document that it says present mean high water. Present doesn't mean future. And so to say the present mean high water in 1936 also means present mean high water in 1986 and in 2015, it's not. It's just not there. If the court applies the plain meaning rule to this document, we give the word present its plain meaning. It means at the time, now existing. And you can't ignore the fact that that word was written in 1936. If I had sent a letter to somebody saying that at the present time I'm doing well, and they get it 2 weeks later, they don't read it and think I'm great for the last 2 weeks. They know it was a fixed point in time.
But once again, why is that necessary to decide? The easement that we're talking about on B1, C1, D1, E1, F1, G1, etc., is not an easement on B3, C3, D3, E3, etc. It's an easement on certain lots that were rendered subject to the servitude. So whether it moves 10 inches, 10 feet, or 20 feet, or doesn't move at all, the lots on which the easement exists are underwater.
I agree with that. I agree that whether it moves or not, the way it stands today, that easement cannot exist. Because you have to have a servient parcel and a dominant parcel.
So the only response to that would be, my assumption is wrong, that actually that 20-foot easement on this plat somehow can be interpreted to apply to the lots above the paper road. I'm struggling with that being a reasonable hypothetical, but...
Well, I don't see how that can happen, Your Honor, as a matter of law, because when you get to Pine Drive is not subject to this easement by the terms of the deed. And therefore, it winks out of existence. And for it to come back in, you would need the present lot owners to all agree that, okay, now we're going to have an easement across this new set of lots. But it wouldn't just pop back into existence because of a 1936 easement. That easement extinguishes when it hits Pine Drive. And I can't find any case law specifically addressing this issue. But the general law of easements and the extinguishment of easements would be, this easement was intended to run with the land, and it was a moving easement. When the land is gone, it can't go on. It ran out of room. And so I just see it as a straightforward matter in that regard. Of course, it was really that straightforward.
You actually said most of the land would be gone, or that the surveyor's testimony was that there wouldn't be 20 feet left.
Yes, Your Honor. I think he had testified that there was a small piece on lot A1, I think.
Right.
A small uplands piece, but certainly wasn't sufficient land to run the length of the beach, or even go on any other lot.
So there is, I mean, that's what, can you, A1, there is a little bit of A1 left that's not submerged, is that right?
I believe that was the plan of survey.
Right.
And the trial exhibits have a series of aerial photographs that overlay Mr. Davis's survey onto Grandview Beach over the years. And the final assignment of error is the was of the courts allowing the plaintiff's expert surveyor to testify as to what the intent of the drafter of this document was in 1936. He testified that there were no surveying standards in 1936. And he testified that he had to make some jumps to figure out what had happened. And I was consistently objecting that it's too speculative to say, when I became a land surveyor in 1981, and I've looked at this now, and there were no standards, but I'm going to apply modern standards and come up with what the intent of the drafter was. I just don't see how. It seems to me that is plainly wrong, and that was clearly inadmissible evidence, and it was error for the court to allow. However, if the court should find that the destruction of the survey in the states extinguishes the easement, then that's a moot point as well. I'd like to save my remaining time for the bottom of the case.
You have 4 minutes and 42 seconds.
Thank you.
You may proceed.
Thank you, sir. Good morning. My name is Mike Ware. I represent Stephen Mallinan et al. And candidly, this is a very unique case that we've been trying to put our hands around for quite a period of time. What I will disagree with is I do believe that all of the lots, as this particular deed and the easement were drawn, are servient lots, if in fact it reaches that point. I'm not sure how aware the appendixes are, but if you look at the page 500, there's an overview of what we have here. And what you have is basically a barrier island. This is not normal land in Virginia. It's a sand barrier island. The island moves out, it moves back. The island moves back, out, moves back. And beyond that strip of land is basically waters. And then beyond that is marsh and sand again. So what the developer did in 1936, after the hurricane of 1933, Buckrow was basically a landfill. They took the same barrier strip of land, and then back in those days you could fill it. So you took behind the sand and you filled it, and you basically paper streets and lots, and as you filled it in, you developed it. Same thing happened to this piece of property, except for the hurricane of 1933, which was so devastating, caused them to say, this is ridiculous. We're just going to go ahead and convey all these lots out to
may
the owners.
May I ask you this, counsel?
Yes, sir.
The plat shows the easement running across the lots that then existed on the water, right?
Correct.
If I were a lawyer and I was looking at this plat and read the deed and I was advising my client on buying F3, I think you're saying that I would be committing malpractice if I said, well, there's no easement on F3. The easement is on F1 and all these down here.
I didn't say this. No, I'm sorry. Maybe I didn't follow you.
So,
are you saying
the 2013 aerial photo shows all of the original lots underwater, right?
Correct.
So if the easement exists only on those lots don't exist anymore. They're under the water and they belong to the Commonwealth. Correct.
I agree, but I don't think that's the case. I think the way the deed is drafted.
So for you to win this point, you have to establish that the easement that was specifically impressed on a series of lots jumps a boundary line, jumps a paper road, and jumps onto a lot which doesn't show the easement. I've just never heard of that. Maybe that's the law. I've just never seen that or heard of that.
Well, the key here, Judge, and I've been faced with this particular situation, is in Virginia, in the Commonwealth, many lots of land go to mean low water. That's the rear part of the lot. If you're a waterfront lot, you own to mean low water, whatever that happens to be, that designation. That
so,
moves.
Yeah.
If you're laying,
so if you buy that lot and it moves, you're stuck with the moving line on your lot. But if you buy another lot in which it was not impressed upon and it moves over the Servian estate, it doesn't, I don't think, create new Servian estates.
Well, if I may follow where I was going, Judge, there is a subdivision in York County which didn't. The engineer and the surveyor did not write the lot so as to go to mean low water. What happened is there was silting over the years, and the person that had bought waterfront property, because of the silting, because of the Chesapeake Bay Act, now that you can't change that, their rear lot line went to within 6 feet of the actual shoreline because of the accretion of dirt. And in fact, they couldn't have waterfront access to their to the pier that was there because that particular dirt had accreted. In this particular case, we have basically the same thing, except for we have an easement that was tied to mean high water. It moves. If it doesn't move, what if we had had an accretion and those lots at the bottom had grown out 200 feet and we had an easement which now was 200 feet from the shoreline? Would we not be here today with the same argument? Well, this easement has to move, and that servient lot has gained in
but the question is not, does it move within the servient lot? Maybe it does.
All right,
the question is, does it jump onto a non-servient lot?
I don't think that that's a non-servient lot. That's where I think we're drawing a distinction. I think if you read the deed and the lots, they're, let's just say for the sake of argument, A1, A2, A3, A4, all running from east to west. The paper streets are there. So it, let's say you're concerned about jumping over a paper street. The paper street is on sand. It'll never be built. In fact, certain parts of them have been vacated because of the development of Wilder's Way. But that paper street is still available. So if I have lot A1 and then it's completely eroded to the street, I can access my property through that paper street. And as it consumes that paper street and goes on, then A1 becomes a servient parcel. The paper street is there for the purposes of an access on a paper street. But it's no different than the easement. The concern that he had with regard to the restaurant, that particular piece of property now is served by a public road that did not exist at the time. That public road runs into another public road which goes into the beach, to the sand. And from that point forward is where the easement takes over. So that restaurant will never be affected, nor will the developed properties. But this particular barrier island, in order for people to have access from one from the north end to the south end, without traversing somebody else's property, have to have an access, and that access is that moving easement.
Okay, but if you just look at the, I mean, I understand how you're reading what the plat language says, but the deed itself says the parties to this deed take the above mentioned to describe property subject to an easement on a 20-foot road as designated on the map recorded with this deed. Which easement is to run with the land from the parties hereto, there are signs and heirs, but it is expressly stated that the said 20-foot road shall not become a public road, but merely an easement for the parties, their heirs, or assigns. That's what the deed says.
Correct.
It says nothing about the property line runs with the high water mark or the mean high water mark or the mean low water mark. So then, and there are deeds certainly that say that the boundaries are impacted by the tide or where the high water, low water mark is. Then you go to the plat and you actually have latitude and longitude lines that are listed with the 20-foot road, correct?
Correct.
And then you have the description that you're talking about with the word present in it.
I believe that was my counsel's description.
Right.
But it is there.
Yeah, it is there. That's
correct.
So my point is if you look at the hierarchy of monuments of title, I mean, there's nothing in this document, the plat, nor the deed, that indicate that this is supposed to move.
Well, we
even have a latitude and longitude line, which controls.
Okay. I disagree with you respectfully.
Right, I understand that.
And the reason being is, if it's appurtenant to and move and is basically for the benefit of those people and goes to anybody that's conveyed afterwards, and it can be severed simply because of the
but there's erosion. Nothing in the language, in the express language of the deed or the express language of the plat that gets you there.
I'm not sure I agree with you there because if there was no reason to have, if it was a fixed easement, it wouldn't be tied to mean high water. There would be no reason to put that statement in there. And present mean high water, and as the experts testified, present mean high water, the day that he took those measurements, before he could draw and reduce it to writing, had changed. Because it moves on a daily basis. The sands deposit, the sands erode. That particular thing was the present time that he actually took those measurements and drew it. And for it to be appurtenant with and move with the land, it would be basically in a different location by the time that plat was recorded. Because of the fact that it's a barrier island and it's a shifting sands.
Well, suppose we have global warming and that water line goes all the way up to the very top near Long Creek. under your logic, the mean tide marker and easement follows it all the way up there, doesn't it?
It would, to the extent that it totally consumed these particular lots, which, if it followed to that extent, it's all water anyway on the backside of that sand beach. So it would just basically be an additional water base behind the sand beach. The sand beach would be covered.
Were you able to find any case law that says that when a plat shows an easement on certain lots, that it jumps to other lots if the easement moves?
Sir, we had that, we probably wouldn't be here today. I can tell you that I've researched Texas. I found some pretty interesting law down in the Carolinas where they're dealing with their particular issues, but as far as Virginia, no, sir.
Well, you've done pretty well without it so far.
Yeah, I think so. Thank you.
All the arguments, though, that it sounds like you're making about how to interpret this sounds like easement by necessity legal theory.
I pled that, but the judge disagreed
right.
with the argument.
Would that still be on the table? Suppose the court were to say, no, there is no jumping express easement, unless you can find authority for it. But easement by necessity, which wasn't ruled on by the trial court, on remand, the trial court can decide what to do with that, if anything. Would that be reasonable?
I believe that would be an option available, but I do believe that, arguably, from what I've read, that the court, this argument I don't think is without merit, because we have so many shifting sands in the Commonwealth of Virginia that I just think, generally, people would probably resolve the issues before we get to this location today. So, I mean, it's pretty apparent. I've obviously dealt with it in other cases where the foresight was not there with regard to how you graph the engineering and the plats. And so then you have to deal with the issue about depositing the sand that actually terminates the ability to have waterfront property. And there's a case that this court heard with regard to Smith Mountain Lake where the engineer miscalculated the rise of the waters in the lake. And so what the waterfront property owners found was that they had like 20 to 25 foot between the shoreline and the actual water table. And this court said, well, no, that wasn't the intent. It actually extends down to the water. And so I believe with the creation of this in 1936, dealing with a piece of sand, the only way for that to actually have any effect of what they were drafting at the time, he was not ignorant of the fact that the sand shift, and for him to draw this and say it goes accordingly right now, the present mean high water, would then finger that it goes with the high water mark. I don't think that there's any other way to interpret it, other than if you were to say that it's pinned on the dirt that particular day in 1936, all parties knowing that in 2 months or 3 months after that particular day in 1936, it will have moved, that it would not be a pertinent to and then go with the land, because it would be severed within the first year, either because of erosion, or if it was accretion and it was there, then it would be probably offensive to the location of where the people would want to travel on the beach. I see I only have 2 minutes and 45 seconds, but I think we've covered the issue quite well in our briefs. Counsel and I have worked quite well on trying to put our hands around this case. I know he thinks he's right. I obviously think I'm right. And we both agree that this is something that both of us can't be right. So I appreciate your time. If you have any questions, I'd be more than happy to answer them.
All right. Thank you very much.
Thank you, sir.
Mr. V, why is he wrong?
Well, because the issue that we're here before is on an express easement. And he's wrong because, number one, it almost ignores common sense to say that when I use the word present, I don't mean right now. I mean sometime in the future. Notwithstanding that, even if it moved, as a matter of law, it cannot go onto that paper street, because that paper street is not subject to the easement by the plain terms of that deed. It says the properties hereby conveyed are subject to. The paper streets weren't conveyed. So,
but if we were to agree with you, you wouldn't win the case. You'd still get a remand, right, for the court to take evidence and to consider, if necessary, the easement by necessity argument.
Well, I think that Mr. Ware and I might disagree on the effect of the court's final order on that issue. But I also think he's wrong about that when we briefed it to the lower court.
But didn't the trial court say, I don't need to get to easement by necessity, because you don't do that when you have an express easement. Okay. But if the express easement were abrogated by a turn of events, then he would have to get to it.
Right. Well, I have the word right here. I believe what it says is there is no easement by necessity as there exists an express easement created in the Grandview deed and plat.
Okay. Well, so if you win on express easement, then implied easement's back on the table, right?
It's not a concession that I want to make, Your Honor, but it certainly sounds like that's probably the case. But for the purposes of this appeal, I just don't see, as a matter of law, how a stranger to a deed could be subject to an easement, or how a dominant estate could become a serving estate by jumping the street. Even though I have time left, I really don't have anything else to say unless there are questions.
Well, thank you. Gentlemen, thank you for a well-done argument. Call the next case.